Hello and welcome back. This is Marlon Johnson and you're listening to Contemplations. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of the podcast. If this is your first time joining us, Contemplations is about sharing, learning, and growing together. It's guided by a book I put together to answer the question, what is my life philosophy? It took me some time to get everything down on paper, but I'm so glad I did. The process forced me to think back on my life, reflect on all the people and experiences that shaped me, and then distill the whole thing down to some helpful principles. If you haven't yet listened to episode 1, please pause here and check that out. We'll wait for you. So, in episode 1, I shared chapter 1 of my book, The Contemplations of Jan Sakwabna. 3 themes popped out. Perseverance in the face of life's tests, the challenge of unrelenting evil, and the many roads that life puts before us. At the end of the chapter, Sakwabna tells his listener to be mindful, to consider whether obstacles are roadblocks or fences meant for safekeeping. Today, I have the great pleasure to be joined by my good friend and brother, Francis Achiri. He is a hard-working family man, first-generation immigrant, a man striving to set up his children and future generations for long-term success, a man with much to share. Francis, my brother, Akwaba.
Bien here. Thank you very much for the invite. Welcome, brother. Welcome.
So, thank you for coming on. I'm very happy to have you. You're my first guest ever. So this could be interesting.
It's a pleasure. And I definitely thank you very much for sharing the first episode. And it took my mind back to some of the things that I learned as a youth, you know, back in Ghana.
Excellent. Good one. So we're going to start the chapter 1 at the very end. Want to talk about advice and counsel you may have received as you try to navigate your way through life. So let me start by asking, growing up, what were your sources of wisdom?
Oh, in my culture, there was the concept of the village, right? And the village, not necessarily that I lived in the village. Honestly, I lived in the capital all my life. But we had this sort of society where any elder of the society could counsel you, discipline you, bring something to your attention, and you give them the same level of respect that you will give to your parents. So yes, obviously our primary source of wisdom were our parents, but we also had the opportunity of being counseled or disciplined by other members of the society.
Okay. So basically, most of the wisdom will be coming from elders.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And then, you know, there were programs that we watched on TV, of course. But then,
yes,
we used to have only one channel, right? And so it wasn't, you know, it's unlike the current generation where you have so many sources of information or streaming channels. We had only one channel, and there were what we call Masi TV, where programs were put on, right? We had a program called Anansi Stories. I don't know if you've heard of Kweku Anansi, right? So Kweku is the name of a boy born on a Wednesday. Anansi is what's this?
Yeah, Anansi the spider.
The spider, right? And Kweku Anansi was considered a source of wisdom, both good and bad. So the Kweku Anansi stories were used to give us life lessons that involve the decisions and the choices that you make that could either make or break you. And there were times when we would gather around the community TV, right? And then we'll be listening to Anansi stories on TV, and they use life lessons to kind of make us
or bring to our attention things or decisions that we need to be mindful of as we grow, hopefully to become productive adults in society.
Okay, so then this gives me a good jumping off point. Was there ever a time when what you would have seen from media would have been different from what the elders were telling you at the time? And if that ever happened, how did you navigate that? You know, who was right?
Honestly, growing up, I don't think we knew. I don't think we had an appreciation of everything that was happening.
Oh.
Right? And so we didn't get a lot of exposure to things that are portrayed in media that in a way is going to have an effect on our lives. However, through those stories, you know, we had what is called local drama, right? And again, you know, those times the local drama was shown on Sundays around 8 o'clock, we'll be gathered around the TV. And so either through announcer stories or local stories, things were shared. Look, it was based on people's life experiences. Mm. But of course, back then, nothing was on social media, right? So when somebody messes up, the world didn't know about it. It was only known to a group of people who probably lived in the era that incident happened.
Okay.
And then they just portrayed it in the account drama, that's what we used to call it.
Yes.
For us to know that this is something that happened. And you know, our local musicians would also sing about certain things and give us advice through those things. So I grew up around those things. I have, you know, memories of songs that I listened to that was based on advice. And everything that we grew up with was based on advice. Storytelling. It was actually advice through storytelling.
I get you.
And music.
What about things like formal school and religion or church? As all as a point of wisdom or sharing wisdom.
Yeah, you know, for us, obviously, education was seen as the, I don't know whether you want to call it, I don't know whether it was considered the source of wealth, but a means to get out of what?
I get you.
Poverty, right?
To lift yourself.
Yes. You know, so for us, going to school was not optional, right? You know, now, our generation was different, right? My dad's generation lived in the villages. They went to farm, right? They would go to school, come back, go and help their parents on the farm.
Yeah.
Right? So it's our generation happened to be the ones that lived in the city.
Okay.
You know, and then obviously through church, and obviously, you know, my growing up, my dad would literally go to church, you know, with my dad every Sunday. And obviously part of it was to help you to become a better person or Christian or whatever, you know, you want to call it.
So I want to ask a question again. In what situation, or were there any situations in which, as you matured, you began to question some of the things that you had gotten as non-negotiable, solid facts of life, no question about it? Did you ever make that turn that you asked the questions, maybe everything I have been taught is not exactly as it is, and how do you decide whether to stay on the path or make a decision then?
Well, we lived in a society where we didn't question the wisdoms or direction of our elders.
Ah.
Okay. And so there were, even if we had questions, we didn't have the boldness to ask those questions. There were things that you had to learn through common sense.
Okay.
Right. But I don't recollect ever questioning anything that my parents ever said as to whether it was true or not, or their validity. I just know that we trusted it to the point that the things that we were being taught, and really especially around the value system, how you behave, how you speak, was considered the best way to live life. And, okay. and obviously, you know, up to this day, there are certain things that I do, which is pretty much a product of the way I was raised. And I think it happens in life. We all have a certain aspect of our upbringing.
Yeah.
And we usually don't throw it away necessarily. We just adapt,
yes,
to how the society has evolved.
What happened to people who chose another path or didn't accept the wisdom? What happened to those people?
Most of the time, based on our experiences, they usually didn't end up the right way. I don't know whether they were destined to.
Yes.
But there are certain things. I'll give you an example. Obviously, we were counseled not to drink.
Yes.
We were counseled not to womanize. Right. Now, in our culture, where I grew up, everything was couched in the Christian,
yes,
aspect.
Yes.
Right. So, up to this day, I don't drink. Okay. Now, not just to be clear, I don't have any issue with people that drink. I've always say there's nothing wrong with drinking, but there has to be a limit. And in our society, those that were considered drunkards were not respected.
I see.
Okay, so if you were considered a drunkard, those that were habitually drunk, they were looked down upon.
You can't control yourself.
You can't control yourself. They were not considered as somebody that you're going to go and seek advice from.
I am
basically considered a drunkard of the society.
Yes.
It's also, you know, that's how we operate it.
So let me understand this. Is that a matter of the Christian faith or the Akan belief? Which is it? Are they one and the same at this point in time, or were they ever?
Yeah, I think they were. And obviously, before Christianity, we had our local customs.
Yes.
Right. And so I think it just meshed, you know. And now, again, there were some of us that didn't live in the village, right? So there are certain sort of customs that we were not used to. But having, you know, as I grew up, I kind of realized they were literally a mixture of the two. You know, depending on where you live, whether it's based on the customs and the culture or religion.
Mm.
But you know, at the end of the day, it was really hard to differentiate between the two.
You know, it's interesting because on the other side of the Atlantic, Jamaica, where I'm from, we have the surely knowledge that our forefathers are from West Africa, but the whole process of moving across an ocean on purpose, by design, that connection of the cultures and the different teachings and wisdom were programmatically stripped away from the people who ended up in the Caribbean.
Correct.
And then it was almost like being deprogrammed,
yes,
from your, and disconnected from your root, and then replaced with Christianity as the structure going forward.
Correct.
And it's only now going back now a few hundred years where people are trying now to reconnect back to understand the true root, the Akan and the West African connections, only to find that our own West African brothers are now very Christian, or more so than ourselves. So it's always funny that in trying to go back 200 years, the place you're going back to, that place has moved ahead already as well. And so we find it funny that today that most Caribbean people who visit Ghana are very surprised to find it so much like the rest of the world.
Correct.
And we're expected to find a world that was 200 years in the past, but that world has moved on.
Yeah, but you bring up an interesting, you know, topic.
Mm.
Our forefathers knew God. They worshiped God in their own way.
Ah.
Right? Obviously, with the advent of Christianity, their way of worship is or was considered paganism.
Yes.
Because, you know, in my local dialect, there's what is called Ochebi Ampo. That was a title of reverence to God. And obviously, in our, you know, our forefathers will do what is called libation, right? They're pouring, they're offering a drink to
so
their god.
So that one made it across the ocean. That is still something that is done.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. When people are buried, or in some, you know, try to remember the ancestors, people pour out a little bit of rum or strong drink onto the ground just to remember and to put it out, you know?
I'll tell you, at the moment Christianity frowns upon it. And so obviously I have the same concept that obvious, you know, it's a form of what? Paganism. But before the missionaries or the white men came onto our shores, that was the way our great, great, great forefathers, that is the way they connected with God. And you know, so obviously those, you know, the advent of Christianity and missionaries coming in, it kind of diluted some of the local norms and customs. And now the Christians frown upon those things. But again, like I said, I didn't grow up in that. We still have people that are called traditional worshippers.
Yes.
They don't subscribe to Christianity. And so those things are done. But even now, chieftaincy still has those sort of customs.
Okay.
So when it comes to, you know, kind of, I don't know what I want to call it, elect a king or a chief.
Yes.
All those traditions are from before the white man, you know, came to.
You're making me smile, because there's a paradox you're telling me here, that at some point there was an established tradition that was supplanted potentially, or another fear was put on top of it.
Correct.
And you had to give up certain things because it didn't fit in the new regime, the
Correct.
Christian regime.
Yes.
And then in Jamaica, where for the most part Christianity was the foundation, we're now adding on to it things that we think or should be traditional things from West Africa. So it seems like in Jamaica there's more tolerance for mixing things into Christianity that makes us feel more whole. And then I'm hearing that in Ghana you're removing things potentially based on the new faith, which is interesting.
Correct. However, the society still accepts those tales.
Ah, good,
right? So that's what I'm saying, is when there are certain traditional customs that have survived, especially when it comes to chieftaincy and the rites that have to be performed when one is installed as a chief.
Okay, good.
Those predate Christianity and they've been held right to. But again, as a Christian, if I were to be installed as a chief, I might find myself in conflict, because they are the traditionalists that still do that. And then I come in, or I'm installed as a chief with my Christian sort of background, and I have to
negotiate.
I guess you want to say, what's the other word for negotiate? Compromise. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. Compromise, because there are certain rites that are traditional.
Yes,
yes, it is. Or they are still going to give, you know, make the libation with the schnapp or whatever it's called, you know. And so, you know, there are certain things that will be held on your head.
And just again,
yes, like I said,
good to hear. That's good to hear. So let me move on quickly now to some other things. And it's the same theme about wisdom.
Yes.
Mentors and role models. You already talked about the elders. But personally, who did you consider to be your mentors and role models?
I don't think that was a concept that we had.
Teachers, coaches, people in church, in the community.
There were people that we looked up to, but I don't know whether we had the concept of, this is my mentor, or you know what I mean? We didn't have those things. It was for us, anyone that was in a position of authority, it could be your teacher, right? We didn't call them our mentors.
Hmm.
But because of their position, either as a teacher, as a pastor, as someone in authority, they had influence over our lives.
Okay.
And so, you know, unlike the Western world where you have different sort of titles as a mentor and whoever it is. For us, you know, we didn't grow up with that. I didn't even know about those striking, you know, to the US. It was just a matter of, you know, yes, like when I was in high school, one of my favorite teachers, if you had to put it in American term, then I would have said that lady was my mentor. You know, she's passed on, Miss Adri. But she inspired me a lot to do well. You know, she was our literature teacher.
Ah, okay.
And the way she taught, the way she carried herself, the way she pushed us, you can describe it as a mentor.
Good.
But did I officially consider her that way? No. But she was someone who inspired us. And, you know, when I was in high school, they used to say I was her favorite for whatever reason. But, you know, so it's very interesting that here that there's an official title.
Mm.
Back home, growing up, we didn't have any official, you know, sort of title.
I'm trying to remember the term mentor. It's from a Greek story. Might have been the Odyssey. But a man was going away on some battle or some war, and they left the son in charge of a teacher who was supposed to monitor him and watch him, and the man's name was a mentor. Mm-hmm. I think that's where that came from, I think. I need to double check on that. But the whole point of mentors is this. People that you look up to.
Yes.
And who can provide guidance to you.
Definitely.
And sometimes people even adopt you because they see the potential.
Correct.
And they don't want it to be wasted, so they try to take you in and try to show you some the paths, which is really good.
Yeah, and in your heart, obviously, in the British system of education, high school, the majority of us stayed in boarding houses. I don't know if it was the same.
It's a popular thing in Jamaica, Russ.
So we spent 7 years in the boarding school, typically from the age of 11, 12 to about 19.
Yes.
We have the first 5 years, and after the fifth year, you take the O level or ordinary level. And then, you know, if you do well, you come back and do 2 more years of advanced level.
Sixth form,
but you go on to college. So it appears that the Jamaican education system was the same as, I guess, the British system of education.
The Commonwealth.
Yeah. So for the 7 years that we lived on, you know, in the boarding house, which in my case was about 3 hours away, there were times when we'll go to school. We had 3 terms. The first term was September to about December. And then we'll come home for the Christmas break.
Okay.
And then we'll go for the second term to Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll come home for about 2 weeks of Easter break and then go for the third term.
Yes.
Through June. And then we'll have what is called the long vacation, or here in America, and they call it summer break.
Yes.
So for that 7 years that you're on campus or in your school, for our generation, you could literally have a teacher or a set of teachers for 7 years.
Truth.
Yes. Because again, you know, either your math teacher, your English teacher, from Form 1 through Form 5 to our passes. So we considered those guys literally our parents, because they were. There were some of us that, in my experience, there are times when I'll see my parents only one time for 3 months. Right? And so for that time that I was on campus, those were the people that we looked up to. They could discipline us. They obviously, they were our teachers, but they had immense power and shaped our lives. And for those of us that are at a certain stage in our lives, they are some of those legendary teachers,
yes,
that we know shaped our lives because of the way they carry themselves and the pieces of advice that they gave us.
You know, it's a good point to make about the boarding school situation. As I also went to boarding school. And the people I considered as I said, almost like parents as well, they still stick in my mind.
Correct.
What shocked me recently was when I visit my former school, even till now, how young these people were. Because I was the one lady who was in my who was I considered a person who was influential to me was the librarian of our school. Her name was Miss Powell, and she got me interested in books and the library. It's a great deal. And it wasn't long ago that I visited the school again, and she told me she was turning 60, and I was like, impossible.
Wow.
Because I thought she was a mature elder lady when I was in high school.
Correct.
And she was just about 5 years older than I was. But and my mother was a teacher as well, and she reminded me that when she started teaching, she was 18. And so her being 18 teaching people who are 15 and 16 years old was quite an experience for her.
Correct.
But in her mind, they saw her as just, as you said, a figure of authority.
Yes.
And a guide and a mentor.
Yes.
And even when she passed away, there's so many people who would reflect on how she influenced them.
Correct.
For the entire lives.
Yes.
You know, and so that mentorship, as you said, maybe is informal, but it's real that people look for role models anywhere they can find them.
Yes.
And then those role models can point you in right or wrong direction, you know. And so so when you find good ones, you know, you have to stick with them. And I hope they can guide you in the right direction so that you can also prosper and do well with your good thing.
Yeah. You bring up, so growing up, teachers were revered.
Yes.
As soon as a teacher walks into the classroom, all attention focuses on the teacher.
Yes.
He or she has that power of authority. And so to your point, it didn't matter how old you were. Rev, when I finished high school, I was, I think, 19.
Mm.
After A-levels.
Right.
And I mean, in Ghana, back then, we had to do a year of national service.
Oh.
Okay. It was a way to get you ready to go on to college.
Okay.
So in my case, I had never been to my village where my parents were born and raised.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I chose or opted to be posted to my village.
All right.
And that was the first time I met my paternal grandmother.
No.
I had never met her.
How is that possible?
Because we live in the city. So even though when we were young, they would go to the village for functions, they never took us. For some reason, I don't know why that happened. So up to this day, that is one of the best decisions that I made, because I'll tell you, when you live in the big city, you don't get to know the reason behind some of the cultural norms or the customs.
Okay.
When you go to the village, everything is explained to you. And so it allowed me to learn a lot of the norms, how we greet that, you know, our elders in the local dialects, you know, the customs around burials, funerals. I learned the local ones in the village, they are of the pure form. The ones in the cathedral were the diluted ones.
I understand.
Right. And so I went to serve in a school where I was 19 years old. But when I entered the classroom, I was given that respect.
Sir, you are a sir.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
So, you know, I think, you know, the story that you shared about going back and then finding out your librarian was persist. That is it. Because once they entered, they had that authority.
Yes.
I don't know whether it's still there. I think it is. But from what I hear, there's another bit of a changing in perceptions towards teachers.
You know, I should ask a question I had for you later on when I'm going to ask you now. And it had to do with the same point about getting the respect at a young age. So I asked about mentors. Have you ever been asked or been approached to be someone's mentor?
I don't think so. Well, in my line of work, yes.
Okay.
You know, obviously, I'm very big on what we call people development, and being able to, you know, take someone under your charge and help them,
okay,
navigate the work. And actually, I've had one or two mentors in my career. People that looked out for my blind spots, gave me advice, helped me navigate the corporate culture or whatever it is, right? But you just mentioned mentor, and I think I'll be remiss if I don't acknowledge an aunt that I grew up with.
Okay.
Because when my parents came here, I was very young. So my brother and my sister, there were three of us. Well, there are four. The last one was born here in the U.S. So the three of us ended up living with this aunt and her family for almost 7-8 years until I came here, you know, after high school. And she's someone that I looked up to because of the way she took care of us, encouraged us. There wasn't any difference between her kids and us, right? And I remember this saying, I don't know if we'll get to it, but there is something that she always used to say that has stuck with me. Her philosophy was that when you are given any responsibility or any job, wherever you find yourself, don't look to your left or to your right to find out whether people are working as hard as you are.
Oh.
You just stay on course because you never know who may be observing the way you interact and work and handle people. And I've always had that as one of my philosophies. Okay. And I'll tell you, when I started this job, you know, I was in school working at McDonald's. I had worked there for only 2 months as a crew person. I walked in one day to get my check. And the GM calls me to the office and says, Francis, we've been observing you over the past few months. We see how you work. We see you earn the respect of your colleagues, people that you came to meet. And so we have a position for you.
Wow.
That is how this philosophy comes in place. Because I was one of those, you know, sometimes when you are in an environment where people are slacking off,
yes,
you might say, okay, why am I doing all the hard work and people are slacking off, right? And it is very tempting to fall into it, not because you wish to, but you feel like you are being taken advantage of. And for me, this philosophy is one that should be hopefully adopted by people, because you know, it's very easy, and I hear it, you know, even in my line of work, where people will be making what comparisons. Okay, why am I doing all the hard work and this other person is not doing it? But if all things be equal, you might be the next person that will get rewarded. You will be given the opportunity based on your work ethic.
You know, that's really, really good advice and a good observation. When I speak to my children about those chores in the house, I find myself saying the same thing to them. Whatever you're doing, and funny enough, my high school, if I'm not mistaken, I get quad, I guess. I think that was my sixth form was a school called Woolmer's Boys School in Kingston, Jamaica. And the Latin motto of the school was Age Quod Agis. And it means literally, do what you're doing. But it was taken to mean, whatever you do, do it very well. Whatever, as you said, no matter left or right, no matter what they're doing on their sides, if you have to do a duty, give it your excellent, give it the most excellent effort. Not because of a reward.
Correct.
Because of your pride you have within yourself.
Yes.
It represents, the outcome of the effort represents you. And it will, maybe there long after you have left, you know, you leave a good impression, etc. So whatever you do, do it well. And I think your auntie was very right. Excellent.
Yeah, good. It's
good advice. Yes.
You know, stuck with me. It's something obviously that as parents, we try to, one, teach it to the next, you know, generation, right? And at the end of the day, honestly, it boils down to work ethic. That is literally what she was explaining through that piece.
You
have a consistent work ethic that allows you to stand out.
You're making me chuckle even further because our children are both in the choir activity. And it is amazing how, and even not even choir, I mean, even sports. I was telling my son the other day that if that coach called you at midnight and asked you to do something to cut his grass at night, you'd ask me for a ride to go to the man's house because you want to impress him so much.
Correct.
Why don't you do that for me? You know, because and maybe it's because the youth have realized, or people realize, that if I impress this person, good things would happen for me.
Correct.
And I'm saying that may be true, but the things that you're doing for your little siblings in your house and your parents are also important.
Yeah.
But you may not see it that way. But the people in your family are going to be with you much longer than a coach will be. And so I was trying to show him that it is admirable that he will do his best for his coach. But it's so much more telling for somebody who will not give you any benefit or do anything to reward you, that you're willing to do that work because of who you are. That is a really good story.
Yeah.
I've made the case yet. He's getting around the corner.
Well, it's getting there, yes. They say one man, and a prophet is never what? Respected in his own time or something to that effect.
Very true.
You know, on the concept of chores and work ethic, you know, one of the things I tell my kids, you know, chores are not made as a punishment.
Yes.
They are, part of it is to prepare you for life.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you're going to be on your own. If you don't know how to clean your room, you don't know how to do your laundry, you don't know how to wash dishes. So I'll give you an example. We have the modern convenience of what? A dishwasher.
Yes.
But I will tell you that we have made it an expectation that our kids know how to do dishes by hand.
Mm.
A few years ago, my wife and I put it into practice. Our dishwasher broke down. We went without a dishwasher for almost a month. Not because we couldn't afford a new dishwasher, but we just wanted to put that into practice. Because where we grew up, we didn't have any dishwashers.
Mm-hmm.
You wash everything by hand. You know, you know what I mean?
That's
your first. So we wash clothes by hand. Several years ago, I went to Ghana, I think 2018, for my dad's funeral.
Yes.
And I made it. I just wanted to wash things by hand. And I was so proud of myself. I took pictures and sent it to my wife just to show them that I was, you know, I was doing this. Even though I could have paid for someone to come and wash it, I wanted to do it. Like, so yes, it you know, our kids, or you know, this generation understanding that when a parent asks you to do chores, look, I always tell my kids, I was doing those chores before you arrived, and down the road you'll be gone.
Yes.
Who is going to do that chore? It's going to fall back on what, your mom and I. We are not going to go hire somebody to come and do it, depending on how old you are, right? And so there are certain expectations that we obviously, we are, as parents, you know, we also set the example.
Yes.
There are times where we do it just to show them that we have had all the process. But I'm a bit, it's always an interesting subject when you are, sometimes it's as if you are trying to convince them not to do their own chores.
I follow you. So I was going to ask you later on in the segment, what is the best advice you've ever gotten from a mentor? You've told me already, whatever you do, do it really, really well. All right, we're going to go into a break and then take a little refreshment and then come right back to talk some more. Thank you, Francis. This has been better than I expected so far. So much appreciated, and we're coming back after the break. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll continue the conversation with my friend Francis in episode 3. Please join us then. Thank you so much. See you soon.